Hello, and welcome to another episode of How to Become a Top Teacher, the podcast where we unpack practical strategies for educators. How people learn is the core question of teaching. I'm James.
And I'm Lisa. Today, we're diving into a fascinating and vital topic, understanding learner development. This is all about figuring out where your students are, how they're likely to grow, and how you, as a teacher, can support that growth effectively.
Exactly. I think this is such a crucial area because so much of effective teaching depends on understanding your learners. You've got to know where they're starting from, right? Otherwise, your lessons might just fly over their heads.
Right. And it's not just about knowledge, but also about their motivation, self-esteem, and even how they interact with you as their teacher. These factors shape whether learning happens at all.
Absolutely. And one of the key points we'll cover today is that development doesn't follow neat, predictable stages. It's uneven, and children grow along trajectories, not rigid age boxes. As teachers, we have to be flexible and adapt to that.
And let's not forget how important inclusion and cultural-linguistic awareness are in this process. These aren't just add-ons. They're central to understanding and supporting your learners effectively.
So, here's what we'll cover in this episode. By the end, we want you to walk away with practical tools and strategies. We'll talk about how to map a learner's starting point, recognize individual differences, identify signs of special educational needs, and respond to cultural and language diversity.
And we'll break it down into four bite-sized sections: developmental trajectories, individual differences, special educational needs, and cultural and language diversity. Each section will include examples, checklists, and activities you can try immediately in your classroom.
Perfect. So, let's start with developmental trajectories. Lisa, could you explain what we mean by that?
Of course. Developmental trajectories refer to the patterns of growth learners go through, but it's important to emphasize that these aren't rigid stages. For example, Piaget identified four broad stages of cognitive development, but the ages he suggested are just a guideline. Children often show higher-level reasoning in areas they're familiar with.
Right, and brain research backs that up. For instance, we know that synapses, the connections in the brain, multiply rapidly in early childhood and are pruned later based on experience. This means early experiences are crucial, but the brain remains adaptable throughout life, so learning can happen at any age.
Exactly. And let's briefly go over Piaget's stages because they're still a helpful framework. For instance, in the sensorimotor stage, which covers birth to about 2 years, infants learn through action and sensory experiences. So, as a teacher, you'd provide rich sensory environments.
Then there's the pre-operational stage, roughly ages 2 to 6. Here, symbolic play and language explode, but thinking is still egocentric. That means teachers need to use concrete objects and visual supports instead of jumping straight into abstract concepts.
Right. Next is the concrete operational stage, around 7 to 12 years old. Logical thinking starts to develop, but students still need concrete examples to work through problems. This is where manipulatives and real-world examples come in handy.
And finally, there's the formal operational stage, typically from age 12 onwards, where students begin to think abstractly and hypothetically. At this point, you can introduce debates, project-based work, and open-ended problems.
But, and this is important, these stages aren't set in stone. A child might show advanced reasoning in one area, like skateboarding, but struggle in another, like maths. So, teaching has to be flexible and tailored to the individual.
That's a great segue into our next topic: individual differences. Lisa, what should teachers be looking out for here?
Well, individual differences include things like learning styles, processing strategies, gaps in prior knowledge, and even metacognitive strengths. For instance, some students might thrive with hands-on activities, while others prefer reflective journaling or group discussions.
So, the goal is to match your teaching approach to the learner. If you've got a student who's a strong visual learner, for example, you might use diagrams or charts to explain a concept. And if someone has a gap in their prior knowledge, you'll need to scaffold your teaching to fill that gap.
Exactly. And let's not forget metacognition, teaching students to think about their own thinking. Simple strategies like asking them, "What helped you solve this?" can go a long way in building their self-awareness.
Great point. Now, let's talk about special educational needs. This is such a critical area for teachers to understand. What are some early signs teachers should look for?
One key sign is that a student consistently struggles with tasks others find manageable. This could be in reading, writing, or even social interactions. It's important to use simple diagnostic steps, like observing how they respond to different types of instruction or tasks.
And once you've identified a potential need, what's next?
Start with small, accessible adjustments. For example, you might use multisensory tasks like combining visual and tactile aids, or offer scaffolds like sentence starters or graphic organizers. The goal is to create a supportive environment where they can engage without feeling overwhelmed.
That's so practical. And finally, Lisa, let's touch on cultural and language diversity. How can teachers make sure their classrooms are inclusive?
It starts with valuing students' backgrounds. Use their experiences as anchors for new learning. For instance, if a student speaks another language at home, you could incorporate that into a lesson, showing that their cultural knowledge is an asset, not a barrier.
And formative feedback plays a big role here too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Feedback should be specific and supportive, helping students see what they're doing well and where they can improve. And group interactions are powerful. Peer explanations and collaborative learning can really help students bridge gaps.
This has been such a rich discussion. Before we wrap up, let's quickly summarize. Teachers need to focus on developmental readiness, individual differences, cultural awareness, and creating a secure, supportive environment for all learners.
Exactly. And remember, learning is social and experience-based. Start from what your students already know, make learning active, and always provide constructive feedback. That's how you create real, lasting growth.
Well said, Lisa. That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Keep learning and keep inspiring.